Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. I am your host, Rob Cope, and today we're talking to the incredibly funny and talented Leeds-based pianist, Jameel Sharif. Before we start the show, let's have a listen to Jamie's track, Friends Since the 80s. This is from his new album, Red Kite, which is out now. Jameel Sharif, hello, sir. Welcome to the Jazz Podcast. How are you doing?
All right. How's it going?
All is well. Great. Just had a listen to your track, Friends Since the 80s, from your brand new album, yeah. Red Kite. Tell us everything about you, who you are, what you do, the album. I'm going to sit and relax.
Oh, God. Off you go.
Off you.
That album was recorded at the conservatoire, at Leeds Conservatoire, where everyone works. So you got Richard Isles on flugel and Jim on alto, Caroline Bowden on drums, and Sam Quintana on double bass. And it was recorded in 2003, sort of right at the beginning of the year. So in the January, you know, when the students aren't around and the staff can kind of get in there and do bits and bobs. And the idea was to write some music quickly and record it quickly and get out and do some gigs and not put too much pressure on or myself for kind of writing, I don't know, just to get something done. Do you know what I mean? So that's why the band's called Five Gold Rings, because I wrote the music over the Christmas holidays. And I said, I'll write a tune a day for the whole of the Christmas holidays. It'll give me an excuse to hang out in the music room and be peaceful, which is sometimes hard, right? In the holidays, you've got to make sure you're disciplined with sort of finding some you time to really chill out and get that relaxation that you need. And it was brilliant. I loved it. And I was sort of, in the evenings, I was on Sibelius and making the parts, and then I was firing them off to everyone in the evening. And I'd warned everyone. I said, we're going to do this. I'm going to send you a tune a day, and then we're going to record it, and then we're going to gig it. And that's the way it's going to be, just nice and easy. So it was nice. It was like writing for people and also writing stuff that could just be played straight off the bat. That was the idea.
Did you say you wrote it in Christmas of 2022?
Yeah, Christmas of 2022, recorded in New Year of 23. That's right. And then, there we go.
That's brilliant. That's exactly how I did my album, A Tune a Day. I was just like, if I do them in one day and then try really hard not to edit them, because I sort of ruin them when I start worrying too much about whether they're correct enough or not. Exactly like you say, I was like, just get something done and have the challenge of like, see how quickly I could. So it's really interesting because it really worked for me. It really made me get a move on, you know?
That's it. And I think you, there's so many different avenues that you can go down when you're writing. right? You can sort of, you could do anything. And it's nice to spend ages going back to a tune and revisiting it, and, or, you know, trying to push yourself with your writing. And I enjoy that sort of like really taking my time, but, it's nice, just nice to take the pressure off and go, all right, well, it's got to be done by 2 o'clock. That's it. That's all you've got. Do something, whatever you can do, you know. So I was like checking things out the night before, going, yeah, I'll do something in the style of that, or, you know, listening, just, and really conscious of a gigging set as well. You know, I want something a bit quicker in there. I want something a bit slower in there. I want something with like an Afro-Cuban thing or whatever, you know, different feels, just thinking of a set and thinking of the players, you know. It was good. It's good. Nice, really nice way to do it. And also I think, you know, you can write for musicians if you're not careful. Do you know what I mean? You sort of like, we hang out with each other and we talk about music all the time and you know, what we like and what we don't like and all of that. And it's like, sometimes that can kind of get in the way of just writing a nice, simple tune. Do you know what I mean? That punters enjoy. That's not that complicated. And just people, a nice, catchy tune.
Yeah, I've tried to start learning how to do that. I call them the fun ones on, you know, where it's like, yeah, I'm like trying to offer the audience something for like, thanks for coming out. Like, here's a piece I think you might actually like.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so it's good, and we had a good time. We did some gigs, and it's been, and it's, we've put it out on James Mannering's got a new label, which is called Lamplight Social Records, and he's been great, because I had a thing where all my previous albums, because I'd done some stuff after I graduated for Octet and some big band things at some point, and a trio album as well. But they were all out on different, very small labels, people who'd helped me out at the time and said, yeah, we'll put it out and we'll help you with digital distribution and all of that stuff that I didn't know anything about. But the problem was, they didn't, you know, it wasn't a full-time gig for those record labels. They were sort of existing to put some of their own material out and help a few mates out. So things never got pushed. And I ended up with this sort of very dissipated like collection of music. And also, what I didn't realize was, on digital platforms like Spotify and what have you, things just exist under the exact band name. So I didn't even realize that, you know, the trio was under Jamil Sharif Trio and the big band was under Jamil Sharif Big Band in a completely different place, you know. So I didn't even have a collection of music to show for. So not only was nobody listening to this stuff, but there was no chance of anybody finding any of it, because it was all just really higgledy-piggledy all over. So James has helped me, and it was quite a mission to take it all back off. So we had to contact all these people that have put it on in the first place, yeah, like 15
really
years
ago. That must have been really hard.
It was really hard. And people were like, oh, yeah, I remember you. And I was like, yeah, I know this is a mission and a bit of a ask, but like, can you get in touch with Spotify and can you take the music off? And, you know, I need to relog it with. So we put it all back up. And now I've got everything. And then, in that, Spotify got in touch with us and said, and Apple Music and Proper, who are the distribution company that James is working with, and said, yeah, they won't allow you to put it all in the same place if it's titled in a band name. So if you put Octet, then it has to be in its own place. It can only be in one place if everything is titled. If everything is titled Octet, or is everything is titled Jamil Sharif, like the band has to be the same, exactly the same. So then I had to redo all the artwork for everything, and just call everything Jamil Sharif. So now the what used to be Jamil Sharif Octet is now just Jamil Sharif, and then same artwork and then the name of the album, and the same for all the albums. So it was a real mission. But yeah, nobody tells you any of that stuff.
No, it's and so it's really good to talk about now for like other artists.
It's really, really important because like we all want it in the same place, right? We all want it in the same place. And that back catalogue, you know, if you've got any chance of anybody ever sort of getting into your music, it relies on them on it all being in the same place. That's the only chance you've got. And then they go, oh yeah, Rob Cope, he's like, actually these last 3-4 albums, like, amazing. I'm going to just, that's it. I just want to listen to that.
You're so right. And even when I did Gemini, I the latest one, I put it in on the forms. And lucky for me, Martin at Ubuntu like came straight back to me and was like, dude, your band name is Rob Cope. And I was like, is it? And he was like, yeah, if you don't put it in, it's going to vanish. And exactly this, I was like, oh my God. He just like, I would never have thought of it. Even having done
He sorted
an album,
you out. He properly sorted you out.
I am so big. But it's like, I've done it before and still didn't think all the way through to like, what will happen? Mm. How will it? I don't know, it's such a like dark and mysterious place, the like backside of Spotify and how it ends up there.
And how it ends up there. And then we got it all up and we scheduled all these dates for re-release, thinking, you know, I didn't even know about playlists and stuff like that. And these days it feels like you've got to get playlisted to get a gig at Ronnie's or whatever. You know, if you've not got like 5,000 plays on an album, and you're not a name, they don't want to know. So I was like, right, I can finally get stuff playlisted. Proper big company, you know, they're going to get it on some playlists. And then Spotify said, no, you've released this already. And Apple Music says, you've released this already, so you can't playlist it. You only get one chance to playlist music, and that's the first time it's released. And they know because of all the, I don't even know what they're called, ISRC codes. So they know. So all that stuff got re-released, and then none of it got pitched for playlists. The only album that I could pitch for playlists was Red Kite, the one at the end of all of the re-releases, which is why it's taken a year for it to come out. So, and then it got accidentally put out for 2 minutes or something with a lot of other stuff. So this accident happened and it went up for a minute or something. And they wouldn't pitch, they won't let me pitch it for a playlist.
Absolute nightmare.
It's a joke, isn't it? You can't even believe it that an accident like that. But I guess they're just saying we haven't got the capacity as a business to be dealing with thousands and thousands of useless jazz musicians like you who are going to screw things up. So you got, these are the rules, stick to them or go whatever. They got it right on Apple Music. So we got some plays there and we got on a nice thing with Ethan Iverson. So we were just under him and that got us a lot of plays. And so I don't know whether it'll be interesting to see whether that makes any difference, whether I can say to some promoter somewhere, hey, look, we got a few plays on this thing. Can we have a gig, please? Does it look good? Does it mean that you'll give me a gig? Because you're not going to listen to it, are you?
I guess it's so hard because there's no like, you never know who's looking for what, you know, and I don't know. I think proper's a great place to be for being, supposedly people tell me they're really good for the playlisting side, but
yeah,
I'm just like, I'm so exhausted by it all at this point. Like, it's so hard to write the music, record it, book the band, get it out. This is the final kick in the teeth that I just didn't need.
Yeah. who's yours out with?
Mine is on Ubuntu.
You said
run by Martin Hummel, and he uses the Sony distributor, the Orchard.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, which is very, and Martin swears by it. I've spoke to other people who say proper's better at playlisting or it's better for jazz. I think it's just I'm just sort of doing what I'm told because I already know that I don't know anything. So, you know, it's one of these hard things. I think about it a lot as a musician, where you're just supposed to be an expert in every field, and it's really difficult to try and manage this on top. So this time round, I've paid someone to do the ISRC codes, PRS, IPL, IPL's not one of them. That's the Indian Premier League. PPL, that's it. PPL.
All of a sudden, you're out there at the crease, facing a quick one from, I don't know, I can't think of any players on the IPL because I don't know enough about cricket.
I tell you, I wouldn't want to be on the end of anybody's fast bowling, you know, into like 100 mile an hour, basically a rock being thrown at you. Anyway, let's talk about your bandmates. And I'm going to start with Richard Iles, because he's one of my teachers at school, and I've got a lot of time. Richard runs the big band at Chet's at the music school in Manchester. And he taught me some amazing life lessons about how to play in a section. I remember he said to me once, when I was playing in the section, he was like, don't add inflection of your own when you're playing these charts. Like, let the music do the talking.
Let it speak.
And you just do your thing. And I was like, it was really good. Valuable.
He's really big on that. Yeah, he's really big on that, and you can hear it in his playing as well. I've heard him say that before. But he's incredible, Richard, and he's dead honest, isn't he? He's like, it's just, you know, you can. It was nice doing the gigs, because we got to share a few journeys, and get to know each other a little bit better. And he's very sort of giving about, you know, how he feels about, and he's so into it. I don't think I know anyone who listens to as much jazz as that man. He's just constantly listening and checking out, going back through his catalog and getting new records. And he absolutely loves it. And he loves playing and loves gigging and brings so much enthusiasm to the band, you know. Yeah, it was good. We had an interesting conversation about, what were we talking about? I don't want to misquote him, so I'm going to be careful here. But I think we were talking about transcription, and whether it's a good thing and whether it's something that should be assessed, you know, at music colleges.
Right.
It's heavy conversation, you know, and on the course that I used to run, Dave Walsh is doing that gig now, but we have like 3 points of assessment for transcription, and it's really useful for the students, especially the ones that, you know, are kind of struggling to find a way into practice, you know, to have something that's just here's a chunk of work that's going to take you quite a while, and by the end of it, you'll definitely see some positives. But I think Richard's problem with it is that there's kind of this kind of wholesale jazz education, you know, this is the way to learn jazz, transcribe this, transcribe these licks, learn to play them over these tunes, you know, da, 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 da. It's a bit sort of, I don't know whether this is what you were saying, but it felt like he was kind of, you know, that one size fits all approach to learning something as personal as jazz isn't the way forward, which is right, you know. So it was good. We got to talk about stuff like that while driving back from Sheffield.
That does sound like fun.
Yeah.
Seems to me if everyone could just pick something that they like, that might be a good way to go, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, is it something that you've done? Did you do a lot of that?
I did loads of, to be honest, because I can't really play like him or sound like him in any way whatsoever. So it sounds a bit disconnected. But most of my transcriptions started out as Michael Brecker, you know, and I just love the challenge of it, like the technical challenge as much as anything. But I would usually have to go on transcribe and slow it down to about 25%. It's absolutely brutal. I did a couple of Bob Minster solos and some A few Chris Potters I started doing from memory, which was fun rather than worrying about writing them out. And, you know, just I always wished, like I did a lot of research, I made a film about Richard Turner, who was at Leeds College.
I remember,
time. And Rich used to transcribe loads of guitar players. And then I used to sort of think, oh, I should have done more John Scofield and, you know, just gotten out of the sax world a little bit more. But I might do a bit more of that. How about you? What kind of things would you...
It's nice, isn't it? I was just thinking as you were saying that, it's just nice to live. It always feels like it's something that I go into feeling very excited about, like, oh, I'm going to do a transcription project. And then I get kind of a few days into it or whatever, and I quickly run out of steam. And like the, you know, like they talk about, what is it, runners like hitting a wall.
Yeah.
Like the transcription wall seems to come quite early in the race for me. It's like bar four. come on, Sharif.
I know what you mean. It's really hard. It's really hard.
I was so excited about this on Thursday. And now it's Saturday afternoon and I'm ready to give up. But when I have sort of seen things through, you know, and I think I've done some Winston Kelly things and Bill Evans and what did I do? Yeah, I forget. The last one I did might have been a Hank Mobley solo on something like Remember or something that I've just listened to loads of times, you know, and short solos. What did I do? God, my memory's so crap. Just kind of goes, but I haven't done anything for maybe a couple of years. But I love the feeling of living with that musician. You feel like you're there with them for a while, and you feel like you're getting closer to them and their and what they're about, the sort of, you know, who they were and how they felt. And, you know, I don't know, it's a weird mysterious thing, but that's what I like about it. I used to get frustrated that I'd come out of one of those exercises not having that language embedded. Like, I thought that was the ticket to sounding like Bud Powell or whoever.
Yeah.
And it never happened. It didn't really feel as immediate as what I wanted it to. But actually, there was something like deeper, I think, going on, just sort of in terms of feeling, you know, really feeling a real deep respect for that musician and for the music in general, and a connection to that period of time that you're sort of almost there, you know.
Yeah.
It feels like that's the closest you can get to it, you know. That level of listening, you know what I mean? I love it.
Oh, absolutely. And you're like looking at like, oh, they, you know, chose these notes. And I like it. It's helped me more probably for teaching than for my own playing, to be able to say to other students a little bit of like, well, in this period, people were doing this. And then a couple of years down the line, you might see a bit more of this. You know, I don't know that it made me any better as a player, but it certainly was fun. I tell you, one thing I really enjoyed was once Andy Scott and I both chose the same solo and both transcribed it and then just compared transcriptions to see what we both like interpreted and how we'd written it out. And like that kind of gave me more of an end goal, which I quite liked, you know?
Yeah. I bet that was interesting.
Yeah, it was.
He'd written it in 4/4 and you'd written it in 7/8.
Exactly. It's really fun to see like which bits... Because, you know, it's like, it's not an exact science. It's quite fun to see if there's anything. I tell you, yeah. One other thing I did really recently that was insanely self-serving was the duets of that I'd written are going to be published as a book, but I didn't want people to have to improvise and have chord symbols. So I transcribed the album solos for the book, but that meant transcribing my own solos, and it took hours and it was so stupid, like sitting down and trying to figure out what if it was like incest, I was thinking this can't be healthy. You know, if I listen back to myself, write it out and embed the things I'm already doing as habit even harder, this might break I'll be able to do.
I think there's something in that though, isn't there? Like there's that, doesn't Rand Blake talk about it in his book? You know that book, Primacy of the Ear?
I don't know about this. No.
And he has these, oh God, what does he describe it as now? Is this it? Yeah, can I just?
Oh yeah, props for the show.
Props for the show, but you know what? I won't be able to find, there's no, and the text, it's one of those books where when I got it, I could read it and then my eyes have gone.
God. Oh, that's so funny.
He's got these, he's got this way. Liquid composition. I've got loads of stuff highlighted. Look.
Highlighted my favorite bits. That's amazing. That looks like proper research notes.
It's like this stuff on, he's got a chapter called Reflection and Integration. And he has this method of, if I remember it correctly, I can't find it in the book. The technique is that you write down the techniques that you're trying to achieve, whether it's something to do with like language, or whether it's a feel thing, or whether it's about how you resolve your lines, or whether it's about where your phrases sit, or whether it's about ornamentation, or it doesn't, whatever the things that you're working on, you try and fit them all into a compressed solo. This is what I took for it, and it took from it anyway. So you might have like 10 objectives and a chorus on You Stepped Out of a Dream or whatever. And then you practice. Sorry, I've got a dog and cat issue here because the cat sat on the piano and the dog's at the bottom. At the bottom of the piano. Like the cat's just winding the dog up, basically.
But just like playing some chromatic shit and then being like, look, how do you feel about that dog?
yeah. Quintuplets. Take that.
What's the cat dog called?
Stop it. Sit down there. So you've got your 10 things. You try and fix. Right, I'm going to have to. Yeah, I might have to edit this because I've got an issue. I've got a situation going on.
That's all right.
I'm going to put the cat out and then the dog will shut up. So all right, give us a minute.
Shots fired. That cat has completely undermined this podcast. But for our lovely listeners who are used to George getting involved in every episode, this isn't so bad. I'm not going to edit this because it's is a much more interesting window.
Sorry about that, mate.
Oh, all good.
So you got give it a rest. You've got your things. And then You record your solo until you've got a chorus that you're happy with, or two choruses. You've got your solo that you're happy with, and then you learn to sing that solo. So that's the routine. So you've got your 10 objectives or whatever you want to call them. Then you put them into your improvisation in a methodical way. And then when you feel like you've got the chorus that you're happy with, you've been recording them, and then you really learn to internalize that solo. So his thing that was all about sort of kind of really reflecting, like heavy level of reflection back on your own playing, to but coupled with trying to get the things that you're practicing. I suppose it's like efficiency of like embedding things that you're practicing into, you know, it really into your subconscious or whatever, you know. Good book. Primacy of the Year. Matt Anderson put me onto it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I did not know about this. That sounds really intense and very interesting.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your tune. Can I ask you about Speed Awareness Course, one of the tracks on the album?
Yeah.
Tell us
about... Good title, right?
It's something probably a lot of people can relate to.
Hey, but you know what? I don't know about you, but for me, the hardest part of the gig is talking to the audience.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I gave titles to tunes. I mean, I wrote with titles in mind.
Yeah.
And things in mind. But I also thought I need titles that I can make a joke about or get the audience involved or say something, have something to say, a little story. Otherwise, I just dry up. Yeah. So Speed Awareness Course. So I say, has anyone been on a Speed Awareness Course?
And everyone in the audience.
Everyone puts their hand up. Hey. And then I say, has anyone been on 2 Speed Awareness Courses? And everyone goes, hey. And then I say, has anyone ever been caught speeding on the way to a Speed Awareness Course? And then it's just me that puts their hand up.
That's so funny. It's great. It's such a good idea for people who aren't certain if and how they feel about talking to an audience, though. You're like setting yourself up for a win. It's great. It's a great idea.
Yeah. And then we play like a really straightforward kind of minor blues.
So great.
That's quite fast.
So great. Such a good idea.
So, and there's that one. And Red Kite is about the red kites at Harewood House that they started a breeding program back in the 90s, I think, to sort of bring them back into the area. And that's been really successful. So I sort of talk about how it's nice to have all those birds sort of flying around North Leeds.
Yeah.
Friends Since the 80s is about my mates who I live in Leeds with and that I've known since I was a wee nipper.
Yeah.
So it's a little dedication to them. There's a tune called Canoe Man, which is about, I can't remember his name now. The guy, there was that TV series, John Darwin. He was a guy from, I can't remember where he's from now, but he committed insurance fraud and faked his own death and went off in a canoe. And there was a BBC series about it.
So wow.
Talk about that. You know, just little chatty things to talk about. Because I hate it. It's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you go and see Alan Barnes or whatever, and he's got everybody. He's got them eating out of the palm of his hands. He's just like a comedian, brilliant gags flying here, there, and everywhere. Just like I'm chatting to you in my front room, you know, and he's talking to 500 people at Scarborough Jazz or whatever, and it's just a good crack. And I start talking and I'm like squeaky voice and sweaty palms.
Yeah, no, it's great to talk about. It's great to talk about because it's a challenge for a lot of people. And so that's a brilliant way. Well, Jamil, I'm going to play this track for our lovely listeners to finish the show, Speed Awareness Course. Thank you so much for coming on the Jazz Podcast.
It's been great. Thanks for having me. Cheers, Robin. Congratulations with your album too. Yeah.
Oh, mate, you too.